This is the Patriots All 22 podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the six-time Super Bowl champion New England Patriots.
Welcome into a new edition of the Patriots All 22 podcast, powered by the CLNS Media Podcast Network. I am Evan Lazar, and I'm joined this week by the guy that I like to call the quarterback guru of Twitter.com. It is Mark Schofield, Pro Football Weekly, Inside the Pylon, Pat's Pulpit. I think I covered all the bases. He's everywhere. And Mark, how you doing? Thanks for doing this.
I'm doing well, Evan. It's great to be back with you. It's great to get a chance to catch up and talk a little ball. Although it's not under the best and brightest of circumstances, still great to catch up with you, my friend.
Yeah, I know. It feels like I have you on the podcast every time people start talking about Tom Brady and declining and putting those two words in the same sentence. And yeah. I bring Mark in to nitpick with me and figure out if there is anything going wrong with Brady or not. So we're going to get to that today. A lot of the issues with the offense. Before we do, though, I want to shout out our friends at betonline.ag. Football season is in full swing. Get into the game with our exclusive sports betting partners, betonline.ag. Sign up today or receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit to start betting college or professional ball. Every spread, every total, every winner or loser, straight bet, parlay, or tease your way through the season. Get the fastest to market odds, updates, and payouts with our new sportsbook partners, betonline.ag. Head over to their website today or use your mobile device to join and use promo code CLNS50 to receive your 50% welcome bonus. There's some great things on Bet Online. You can bet on win totals, playoff odds. You can bet on Tom Brady's stat line on Sunday. And that's where I want to start with you, Mark, is with Tom Brady. And I think that there's a lot of discussion, a lot of it very intelligent discussion, honestly, about how it's not necessarily just Brady. It is his supporting cast. It is the pieces around him. But I wanted to get your opinion on a few of the things that are going on with just Brady's play isolated from everything else. And I think the biggest thing that I wanted to start with, well, we're gonna hit two things here. But the first thing I wanted to start with was mechanically, physically, and also just with his throwing mechanics. Is there anything that you are seeing from Brady that has changed or has gotten worse in your opinion?
You know, when you watch Brady, I think a lot of the, you know, low-level discussion about, say, his decline or, you know, he's fallen off the cliff, people like to point to arm strength and say, oh, he doesn't have the arm strength anymore, his arm's a wet noodle and things like that. And I think, look, Tom Brady's arm looks as good as it ever has. You look at a couple of weeks ago against Dallas, that 3rd-and-20 conversion in the rain in a driving windstorm when he slides left in the pocket, hits Julian Edelman. He certainly had enough velocity on that throw. You look at the end of this Chiefs game, the throw to Matt LaCoste in the end zone, you know, on their final possession. That was an absolute rocket shot. So I don't think the velocity is an issue with Tom Brady. In terms of mechanics, though, when I rewatched and then rewatched yet again that Chiefs game, you know, the earlier this week, when you look at the second quarter interception that he threw to Matt LaCoste, and to be fair, the Chiefs, they sort of catch Brady here. They're running, you know, a Mabel coverage, you know, it's a convertible cover three, the outside corner Breland, he's going to carry one vertically, but if one goes inside and that's Julian Edelman, then he's going to rotate over to two and carry two if he goes vertically. And that's exactly what happens. And so the Chiefs have the perfect defense here because the Patriots run a little seam from LaCoste and then an inside route, in breaking route at 5 yards from Edelman. It's the perfect way to sort of catch the offense here. And so the Chiefs get lucky on this one. But if you watch Brady on that throw and his mechanics, he locks up his front leg just a little bit. It's not the like flexed front leg in his left knee that you want to see from a quarterback. And the reason why that can be an issue, if you think back to last year, and I believe you and I talked about Tyree Jackson's mechanics last year. You usually see with taller quarterbacks, when they lock up that front leg, it does two things. One, it impacts placement, it impacts your release point. But two, it also sort of breaks that mechanical chain between your upper body and the lower body. It almost works like you're, you know, putting a brake on yourself in a sense because you stop the forward momentum, you stop that lower body getting torque and rotation and power into your throw. So it impacts velocity. You see the velocity dip. And if you watch this play, there's still an opportunity for Brady to hit LaCoste on the seam route because Breland comes under it. And if Brady gets enough on the throw and gets it over Breland coming underneath, they can still hit this for a big play. But he doesn't get enough unhurt. If you look at the play, Lacoste is reaching back for this throw because there's a lack of velocity on the throw. And so I think in isolated moments like this play, there's been some inconsistency with his mechanics, particularly in the lower body. And if you think back, Evan, to a year ago, after the Tennessee game, when there were questions about Brady throwing to his left, you and I were talking, you know, in Twitter on the DMs about his mechanics. And it seems like for the second year in a row, at least, as we get later into the season, there's sort of a mechanical breakdown. And we know that Brady's a fanatic when it comes to his mechanics. He's always working on his mechanics. But for 2 years in a row now, we're seeing them sort of not fall apart, but some weaknesses or some things that could get tweaked as we get later into the season. So that is something I'll be watching over these next 3 weeks. What do his mechanics look like? You know, last year it might have been an injury that he could have been dealing with. Are we seeing something with that? We know he had the right elbow issue that he's been listed on the injury report a couple of times this season lately. And so that's what I'm going to be curious to see. Are we going to see sort of that continued chiseling away at the fanatic mechanics we usually see from Tom Brady?
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of throws over the last 2 weeks to the flat, one to Rex Burkhead and one to Julian Edelman on fourth down, where there was definitely pressure on the Edelman one and the pocket was kind of getting pushed on him a little bit. But it just doesn't seem like he's getting that full kind of rotation of, with his hips and with his feet to get pointed out towards a throw like that. And he's throwing it with his hips pointed forward. And he's just kind of flinging it out there all with his arm. And for the second straight year, like you said, it seems like as the season goes on and as I'm sure the bumps and bruises started to add up, and then this year, and we're going to hit on this anyways, I think that the offensive line being what it's been, I do think that even in his subconscious, there's some mental aspects to it where he might not be kind of fully committing to throws or fully stepping into throws, similar to what we saw last year. And I think I think it's within the margin still. Like, I don't think that it's something that is happening every throw or it's happening too often or anything like that. But with an offense like this, you miss a fourth down throw like that to Julian Edelman, you need to hit those plays because there aren't a ton of open receivers right now for him to be kind of missing reads or missing any sort of opportunities that he does have down the field.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that fourth down throw, Evan, is another fantastic example. I'm really glad you brought that play up because, you know, they get sort of a zero blitz look. They get a slot blitz. The defender over Edelman comes. And so there's a window to hit Julian to move the sticks on this fourth and seven. And like you said, on this play, Brady does sort of have pressure in his face. But what's weird about it is they're on the left hash mark. The ball's actually middle of the field, close to the left hash mark. Brady's dropping down the left hash mark, and he's trying to throw this speed out to the right slot. Edelman's getting towards the right numbers. But his lead step takes him straight up the hash mark, and it's obviously well left of the target line. So, like you said, those hips don't really come through. And again, he's got pressure in his face, so maybe he doesn't want to step directly into this. But that disrupts the throwing chain yet again, and the pass is well off target. And, you know, maybe he's feeling the pressure there, but to the offensive line point, if you've been taking hits, taking more hits than you used to, getting pressured a lot and guys aren't open, you might sort of let the mechanics go a bit at times to sort of take care of your body. It's a self-preservation thing. The problem becomes where, and we saw you and I know you saw these numbers from Kevin Cole on PFF today, the PC did about the Patriots offense, guys aren't getting open. The quarterback's getting pressured. And it's this sort of snowballing effect on the entire offense. I said this on my show this week. I'm very much reminded of the Mike McCarthy, Aaron Rodgers Packers from a couple of years ago when it was after Jordy Nelson came back from his injury, from his ACL injury. Nelson and others weren't getting open. The offensive line was struggling. And as a result, Rodgers was tasked with having to make absolutely pinpoint precise throws. Otherwise, there just wasn't an opportunity to make plays. The window for error was like so small. And that's what the Patriots offense reminds me of right now, is because guys aren't getting open. Defenses are doing, for the most part, what we saw against Houston, where they'll double Julian when they can, and they'll put a defensive back on James White. Nobody else is really getting open. And now he's getting pressured as well. And it's tasking Tom Brady with making pinpoint accurate throws when he's 42 years old. It's just a recipe for disaster right now.
Yeah, it's funny because I still think, even though he's 42 years old, when you look at this offense, I would think when you have a 42-year-old quarterback, a lot of the lazy analysis is instantly, it's Brady's getting old, right? Brady's on decline. He's 42. It's his fault, yada, yada, yada. I still think that he would be playing at a much higher level if the things around him were working a lot better than they are currently and he had more to work with it in terms of skill positions and pass catchers. Are you in that same mind frame right now?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and if you were to ask me, like, rank the problems for the Patriots offense right now, the reasons why they're struggling, it would be a while before I get to Tom Brady. You know, I think that he could still play the game at an extremely high level. You know, some of the throws that he's made this season have been very impressive. So I think that, you know, it's a situation where you have a quarterback at this point that needs a little bit of help, and he's just not getting it. You know, and guys are having some individual moments. You know, Edelman is certainly on track to have one of his most productive seasons, partly because there aren't many other options for this offense right now. James White is having a fantastic year. But when you look around, there's a lack of true production from the other guys on a consistent basis. Guys have shown flashes, whether it's Myers or Harry or even Dorsett at times, but it's not quite there. If they could get just some consistency from the other guys that aren't 11 and 28, then you'd see Brady playing extremely well. But I don't think he's the main flaw or even like a top 3, 4, 5 problem with this offense right now. There's the offensive line, the lack of other guys. There's a lack of a ground game. There's some problems with what they're doing schematically at times, which I know we're going to talk about. I'd say mention all of that before I got to 12.
Yeah, I agree. And before we get to all that other stuff, mentally, what are you seeing with Brady right now? Because I think a big topic of conversation is certainly the circle of trust, right? Yeah, who's in it? Yeah. Who's not in it? And there's certainly evidence. I actually DM'd you about a play the other day, a little flat route out of kind of like a bunch on the goal line to Jacoby Myers, and the corner goes over the top. And yeah, I think the corner could have probably crashed down pretty quickly on it. But in my opinion, and I think in your opinion too, if Brady puts the ball on Myers quickly there, then Myers has a pretty good chance of scoring, and instead he takes a sack. And when you watch a play like that, and I hate kind of jumping inside people's heads because we don't know what he's thinking and no one does besides him. But in a play like that, when you watch that and you see Myers is open and has a chance to score, and instead he kind of comes off it quickly and takes a sack, it's hard to kind of justify that in any other way besides a trust issue, because Brady hasn't gotten worse, at least in my mind, about seeing things or reading a progression, or he's not all of a sudden not seeing what's going on out there. And I just don't know if he's fully confident in pulling the trigger. There's another play I pointed out, and Matt Lacoste kind of got up the seam a little bit, and he got inside and over the top of his man, and he was open. You know, he was open in the middle of the field on a throw that we've seen Brady hit a million times to Rob Gronkowski. Right. And if that's Gronk running that seam, that ball's on him all the time, all the time. And it didn't get there to Lacoste, and he ends up throwing the ball away. What are you seeing mentally from him, and how much is it? Do you see him kind of getting hung up on reads or anything like that? Or do you kind of chalk some of it up to trust also?
No, I think you do have to chalk some of it up to trust. And what's interesting, the first play you mentioned, that Myers bunch route down near the goal line, after you DM'd me about that, I started thinking about that play some more, and I dug up some playbooks, and I found, and again, not every playbook is similar. Teams teach progressions and stuff differently, but I found that almost exact same concept in the Eagles playbook, their current playbook. And the first read on that progression is that route to the flat that Myers was running. And so that makes me think that it's probably the same in New England's playbook, and that was his first read, and he just didn't trust it for whatever reason. And if you look back at that play, you know, it's a 3rd and 5 at the 12:26 mark of the fourth quarter. The corner, like you said, he comes over the top. They don't switch the coverages. They don't switch their responsibilities. They just play this straight up man. Corner comes over the top. There's a window to hit Myers on that. And like you said, if he puts it on his outside shoulder, you know, they probably get close to the end zone. But instead, he doesn't trust it. He doesn't pull the trigger. And then his eyes come to the second read, which is Edelman on that snag route in the middle of the field. But he's bracketed. You know, he's got inside outside on. So there's nowhere to throw that ball. And he ends up taking the sack. The non-throw to Lacoste, that's first quarter. It's near the end of the first quarter. It's a play-action play. And he's got him wide open up the seam. You know, there's trail coverage underneath him. There's the backside hook defender that's, you know, 8 yards away. So there's a huge window to throw it underneath. And over the top, the nearest safety, the nearest defender over the top is about 10 yards deep off of Lacoste. There's sort of a huge window there. Brady, for whatever reason, doesn't pull the trigger. And what I found interesting about that play is next time he's looking at Lacoste is the interception he throws. So you start to wonder, is he going back to the sideline and McDaniels is saying, look, you had the seam route to 83. It was there. And so the next time he's got that play, he feels like he has to throw it. And that's the one that gets intercepted. And so it's just all these little things that start to add up. And in terms of whether he's getting through his reads quickly or not, I still see the process and speed there from Tom Brady is as good as it's ever been. So I don't think it's an issue of him like getting through reads slowly or anything like that. I think it's more the trust factor. And he, for whatever reason, doesn't feel quite comfortable throwing to these guys. And people might say, is this a Brady issue? No, quarterbacks go through these things a lot. You know, one of the teams I cover are the Philadelphia Eagles. And I've seen Carson Wentz this year go through similar issues where he doesn't feel comfortable with some of the guys he's throwing to. And you will see him double clutch on routes. He's not trusting his eyes. He doesn't feel like he can pull the trigger, even though when the route is extremely wide open, you could certainly fit a throw in there. And so quarterbacks go through these moments. It's just for Tom Brady at the end of a stellar Hall of Fame, first ballot, Mount Rushmore of quarterback's career. He's at the point now where he trusts himself more than anybody else. And he trusts Julian Edelman more than anybody else. He trusts James White more than anybody else. And he just doesn't feel quite right throwing to these other guys.
Yeah, the Lacoste one, really, I think. The Byers one, I put it out there. I said I thought it was a missed throw that he could have had. The Lacoste one really shocked me to see that That's a route that is just his bread and butter. You know, that's the Gronk route. That's the route that he's made for the last decade, basically a Hall of Fame career part two. Is that route and option routes to Julian Edelman and different things to Edelman. So to not see him throw that ball was just shocking. I was really surprised. And he has thrown that ball a couple of times to Lacoste this season already. But I will say the one thing about trust, and I think that everybody wants to get on Brady and say that trust it's his fault. It's a one-way street. It's just Brady. And I think it's clearly a two-way street. Right. And he could throw the ball to Lacoste and maybe Lacoste drops it like he dropped that ball in the flat a few weeks ago, wide open catch in the flat at the sticks. And it just goes right through his hands. Same thing with Jacoby Myers. You know, he has Jacoby Myers on that third down play on the crosser and he hits him right in the hands and it goes right through his hands. Well, then when they come back to a big spot like a goal line play or the very end of the game, the last play of the game. It's kind of hard to throw that guy the ball in a big spot. And on top of that, we can see the drops. We can see some of the fades, the routes fading or route not being ran crisply like N'Keal Harry's in Houston or whatever the case may be. But Brady knows every single mistake these guys are making. You know, he knows all of it beyond what any of us do because he has the playbook and he has 20 years of knowledge of the playbook on top of that. So there's little things, I'm sure, route adjustments or reading the coverage through or little things that they're supposed to turn a route off this way or that way that they're not doing that we don't necessarily know just watching the tape that Brady does, obviously. So all those little things are probably in his head a lot of the times that are adding up. So some of these guys, Lacoste, Jacoby Myers, they got to go out there and do it right. You know, they got to give Tom Brady a reason to trust them. So I think that sometimes it's just put all on Brady to, the guy is open, just throw him the ball. It's like, yeah, but, sometimes you got to think about it from both perspectives. And I think it's often a two-way street with that sort of thing.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And, a perfect example of that was what Dan Orlovsky highlighted after the Texans game.
Right.
And there was that sort of route miscommunication between Brady and Dorsett. Dorsett missed something, broke off the route when he should have stayed vertical, and they missed a chance for a play, and that's a veteran. And so when you think about, Dorsett's been with this team for a while now, but guys like Lacoste and certainly the rookies and N'Keal Harry and Jacoby Myers, they're certainly unfamiliar with some of the nuances to this playbook that you and I both know can be hard from a wide receiver perspective because of all the conversions and adjustments that come on a play-to-play basis. So Yeah, there is a two-way street when it comes to trust. And, you know, certainly there's been reasons why Brady might not want to pull the trigger, or when he does, he gets let down by the guys on the other end, either not running the right route, not making the right adjustment, or just physically not catching the football.
Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about some of those guys around him. We talked a lot about Brady, rightfully so. I want to go to the receiver position. We talked about the offensive line a little bit already, too. So I want to go right to the receiver position. My game plan this week that comes out tomorrow or Friday for people who whatever you're listening to this is about, you know, where do we go from here, right? You got three games before the playoffs to figure something out, to figure out some sort of consistency. It's not really that all that different from where they were at last year. And last year, obviously, they leaned on the power running game and they figured it out. I don't know if it's as obvious with the personnel. Last year, they had a fullback that was a pro bowler. They had an all-pro blocking tight end. So it's a little bit easier to kind of figure out what the best approach was. I don't know what it is this year. But my question to you is you got to put 11 personnel out on the field a lot of the time. You got to put three receivers out there. Who are the three guys that you would like to see them roll with here over the back half of the season and obviously into the postseason also?
You know, this is such a hard question because if you think about, you know, one of the main jokes about the Patriots and their roster construction over the past, say, 10 years is that, you know, they're just working towards the all slot receiver offense. Like, that's what they want. They just want a bunch of slot receivers. Well, now that's basically what they've got. Like, every receiver is either a traditional slot type, like an Edelman, like a Myers, like a Dorsett, or maybe a big slot type like a Mohamed Sanu or N'Keal Harry. So they've got five guys that are basically slot receivers, but they can't all play slot. Somebody's got to play the X. Somebody's got to play the Z. And so when you think about it that way, it's hard to just sort of delineate who should be Z, who should be S, who should be X. It's tough right now. And in trying to put together that ideal 11 personnel package, I think obviously there's one name set in cement, stone, whatever you want to call it, and that's Julian Edelman. Outside of that, it's really anybody's guess. I think the guys that I would like to see get the most run down the stretch here would be Sanu and Harry in addition to Edelman. Yeah. But I could hear an argument from Myers given some of the stuff that he's shown. I could hear an argument for Dorsett in a sense. But I think with Dorsett, the thing that stands out to me is when he was having his most success and his most productivity, it was early in the year when they still had Josh Gordon. Even at times they had Antonio Brown. And so he was seeing CB3, CB4 types, but he's not seeing those guys right now. Right now he's seeing maybe CB2, maybe even at times CB1, you know, because they don't have other weapons. And so Dorsett's struggling against better coverage defenders. And so I think if push comes to shove, given the talent and given what we've seen, I think they've got to find a way to involve N'Keal Harry more. And so I want to see him on the field. And I think, look, Mohamed Sanu came from a similar type of offense, what they were doing down in Atlanta. There's some familiarity there. You know, he's familiar somewhat with the playbook. Yes, there have been moments when he could have run deeper routes and broken them off more at the sticks and things like that, but I'd like to see him get some more playing time as well. But I don't know. Like, what about you? Like, who do you think?
Yeah, it's really a tough question because I think that Edelman's obviously set in stone. Behind Edelman, it's amazing to me how Philip Dorsett has kind of fallen here because, and I agree with you wholeheartedly about the matchups that he's getting and things like that. But remember early in the season, he had that reception streak going where Brady hit him on like 25 straight passes or something like that. And to have him go from that to where we're at with him now, where he can't get open and he, every time Brady throws him the ball, it's an incomplete pass, it seems like. I mean, I don't have the exact stats off the top of my head, but I know for a fact that Brady targeting Dorsett right now is, I think, below 50% in the last month. So that is just staggering to me that a guy can go from catching something like 25, 26 consecutive passes, whatever it was, to catching nothing practically. Right. So I think that he has got to be on the outside looking in right now. I don't necessarily care, and I know a lot of people do, about investment. I don't care that they traded a second-round pick for Mohamed Sanu. I don't care that they drafted N'Keal Harry in the first round. But I do think that Harry gives them the most upside. And I think Myers is more of the type of guy that they like, maybe. But if Myers is going to continue to make these little mistakes like drops and running the wrong routes and not being on the same page as Tom Brady, his physical skills are just not anywhere close to being what Harry's are to make up for that. And the one thing I see with Myers a lot is that it takes him a long time to get into some of these routes. He's a great route runner at the top, right? His breaks and the way that he sets up defensive backs and can break off routes and create separation at the top of the route is fantastic. But they have to wait a long time for that guy to get off the line and to get moving. So that, I think, is a big issue for him. And that kind of goes to the whole thing about how the offense is a little bit slow right now. So I really agree with you. I that was a long way of saying I agree with you. I really think that Edelman, Sanu, and Harry give you the three best receivers that you currently have on the roster on the field at the same time.
Yeah. So you know what we're going to see? We're going to see Edelman, Myers, Dorsett, the rest of the world. Yeah.
Of course. And listen, I think Myers is a decent player, and I think that he's a guy that fits a lot of what they do, right? He can play inside, outside. He's more of a slot guy. He runs routes when he runs the right route. He runs routes the way that they like people to run routes. He certainly is a much better route runner and more of what they like in their cup of tea than N'Keal Harry in that sense. But we saw the flashes from N'Keal Harry over the last couple of weeks, the back shoulder touchdown. Obviously, the should have been touchdown against Kansas City. And there's just so much raw ability there. That's why he was drafted in the first round. That with what's going on with the offense right now, they need the raw ability. They need the guy that's just going to be able to go out there and kind of just out-athlete some people. You know, and that's, at the end of the day, we talk a ton about scheme. We talk a ton about route running details and ton of all these little kind of nuances to the game. Sometimes it's just about man on man.
Right.
It's just about my guy is better or faster or stronger or bigger or taller than your guy, and we can just beat you like that.
Yeah,
and
I think that's
what Harry gives you.
Yeah, it's that sort of line from the Belichick and Saban special that just came out, and Belichick has that story where he gets on the plane and everybody's got the computers and the spreadsheets out. He's like, guys, we lost because we couldn't tackle. You know, at some point, sometimes the game comes down to, can you win your one-on-one matchup? Can you beat the guy across from you? And like you said, Ethan, Evan, we can, you know, talk about schemes and X's and O's until we're blue in the face. But, you know, it's like those coaching clinics when the guy gets on the whiteboard and he draws things up and he says, you know, this is how we won our conference this year. And at the end, he's like, oh, and by the way, we had an all-conference guy at X, we had an all-conference guy at Z, and we had an all-conference guy at quarterback. Like, yeah, because sometimes talent trumps scheme, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about scheme, we're going to talk about some scheme.
not to belittle it completely,
Josh McDaniels, rightfully so, I think, at this point, has been in the crosshairs for a lot of people. When the offense struggles like this, they're averaging a little bit under 18 points a game since the halfway mark, of the season. The offensive coordinator's got to shoulder some of the blame. I mean, that's I think, a fair statement. What are you seeing with the play calling, with the scheme itself, that you would like to see improve or like to be different or any type of struggles with it at all?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly fertile ground here we can cover. You know, I think one of the things that, and he did do some of this against Kansas City. Obviously, I think there has to be a lot more of it, is you understand now if they're going to double Edelman, you've got to put him to the boundary. You've got to put him to the outside, like force their hand. If a defense really feels like that's what they're going to do, then fine. Like, put two guys out on the sideline and basically have them just stand there. I don't care what he does. Like, you know, you've got to use that defensive adjustment in your favor. So that's one thing that I'd like to see more of. The outside zone, the wide zone game, like for other than like bits and pieces we've seen, it just, this offensive line, due to the injuries, due to the influx of new faces, it lacks the cohesion to truly run that sort of, you know, wide zone, outside zone type of stuff, because that, again, requires such, you know, verbal and nonverbal communication and all the little nuances that go into executing that kind of scheme. They don't have the familiarity with each other. You know, this is part of the problem. We're also seeing in the interior with pass protection where, you know, first it was Karras and now James Ferenc. You know, they don't have the familiarity, you know, Mason and Dooney on each side of them to sort of pick up some of that stuff. And so that aspect of the run game, I think you sprinkle it in here and there, use it as sort of a change of pace, but I think you need to be more running on the interior, more gap and power type of stuff. The other thing is, look, now we see hard evidence, both numbers and film, that teams have no fear when it comes to blitzing Tom Brady. Teams have absolutely no fear going zero blitz against you right now because they know that there's not going to be anywhere for him to go with the football. You have to also use that against them. You know, you have to have more quick game stuff, more quick route concepts, more draws, like things to counteract that zero blitz look, because this was always sort of a team that loved to sort of get the ball out of Brady's hands quickly. If they're going to blitz, if they're going to go zero blitz, you've got to have an opportunity for the quarterback to make something happen. You look at second quarter, second and seven, 7:13 mark against Kansas City. This is a couple of plays before that fourth down miss to Edelman. They get a zero blitz look, and his option is to go back shoulder to Philip Dorsett. Like,
yeah.
That's not a winning route for this team right now. Like, if he's at least got something underneath or a different option to go to, they can make something happen there. And so, like, those are some things that I've kicked around. I'm sure, Evan, you've got more, but there is some fertile ground here to cover when it comes to doing some different things schematically.
Yeah, I think that the Dorsett route is kind of where I was going first, and that is, let's put some guys in spots where they can win, right? Yeah. Like, I think the biggest thing for me has always been players over plays, and you have to put those guys, if you know that that route is either going to be a fade ball or it's going to adjust to a back shoulder, if it's a blitz or something like that, then why is Philip Dorsett the choice to run that route when right. you have a 6'3" rookie who's really good at winning in contested situations, right? That should be a N'Keal Harry spot. And this isn't all just about N'Keal Harry, but I think that with N'Keal, we've seen, and really the pass against Kansas City that he caught was the first time, other than the back shoulder, those are the two examples that we got, right, where they finally used him in a way that he can be successful. And right now, I just look across the board and I think to myself, all right, other than really Edelman and maybe, I guess, Jacoby Myers, because they have gotten a lot out of an undrafted rookie, who is Josh McDaniels putting into a position to really succeed this year and really have something that they're comfortable with doing, something that they feel confident in themselves in doing? You know, you got to sit down with your guys, and you got to sit down with N'Keal Harry and Mohamed Sanu, I think, at the top of the list, and say, okay, what are the five or six routes or the five or six concepts that you guys really feel comfortable in? What's the way that I can help you get open and feel comfortable and feel confident playing out there? And then you got to ride those things. You know, and right now I really feel like a lot of the time with McDaniels, every single time they throw a ball to somebody, I kind of scratch my head and I say, well, why was that player? Right? Like, why was Dorsett the back shoulder throw to Jacoby Myers in the end zone that he dropped? Same thing. Yeah. You know, why isn't that N'Keal Harry? Like, that's literally why 50% of the reason you probably drafted the guy was because he can win in those types of situations.
Exactly.
So why isn't he the one throwing you, getting you the ball there? The other thing that you hit on it too was the wide zone, outside zone, whatever you want to call it, running game has not worked all year long. They have averaged, I think it's 2.2 yards per carry off the left tackle this year. Putrid. And they've not been much better going the other way. I think the other way is about 3.3, which is still very bad. You know, anything below 4 is bad, and that's well below 4. So a lot of it, I think, was made out, but myself included, early on in the season or you know, before Isaiah Wynn's return, so not even early on, but during the Marshall Newhouse era, let's say. I think a lot of it was made out to deal, well, they can't run left because of Marshall Newhouse. There, and now that Isaiah Wynn is in there, they've broken off a few. They had that toss play that worked out for them, and they've broken off a few of them. But early on in that game against Kansas City, they couldn't run left either. So I really think that you're 100% right. This running game needs to get vertical. This cannot be a horizontal rushing attack where they're trying to draw out these plays and get people on the outside. I don't know if it's their offensive line's game. I also don't know if it's Sony Michel's game really either. You know, I really think that he's the type of guy that you need to hit in between the tackles and get him vertical and get him upfield. The last point that I think is just also flabbergasting to me, especially in some of the recent matchups, like against Dallas or like against Kansas City, who is blitzing the heck out of him, where's the screen game?
Right.
Where is the screen game gone? So the Patriots this year, their EPA success rate right now is the fifth best in the league on screen passes. They're a good screen team. They've been a good screen team for years. They're a good screen team this year. And for whatever reason, they just have abandoned it in recent weeks. They went against Dallas a few weeks ago here at Gillette, and Dallas was the worst defense in the league at defending screen passes, and they ran one screen the whole game. And I think that some of it, listen, I don't really like to get caught up in the play calling because, I think that some of that gets misconstrued. And if the players went out there and executed it better, then it wouldn't really matter the plays that were being called as much. But I think that the screen game, the running game, and the decisions that they're making in those two veins is very much warranted for kind of criticism. And Josh McDaniels always says about the running game that it's similar to the passing game and that you want to be able to run inside and outside and kind of present that threat to the defense. So they're not just loading up and inside, they're not just loading up outside to stop you, having some kind of versatility. Well, if you're going to average 2 yards a carry going off your left tackle, it really doesn't matter. To be honest, if they think if it's coming or not, or if they want to respect it or not. So that's where I would start with McDaniels. I think we kind of both covered it all there. And really, it starts for me, though, with putting everybody in a position where they can succeed and doing things with certain players that fit their skill set.
Yeah, I mean, that's the job of a coach more than anything else, is to put your guys in a position to be successful, whether it's from alignment, whether it's from scheme, whether it's usage, whether it's any part of this. And they're not doing it right now. You know, they're relying on guys to do things that they're not suited for, like the back shoulder stuff to Myers and Dorsett. They're, you know, getting away from the screen game, which I think Evan is a fantastic point. You know, this is such a good screen team. The EPA and the success rate, I think, you know, knocks that out of the park. They're not doing it right now. And so
they're sending a zero blitz at you and you don't want to run one screen.
Right. Just it really one, just doesn't something make sense. To soften it up. But yeah. They're not. And, yeah. You know, thankfully, look, we get Cincinnati this week. Okay. Yeah. So there's at least that. There's at least that sort of opportunity to have that get right game, because then you get, look, you get Buffalo on a shortened week. You know, in a game which could decide the division, which is absolutely a massive game now. You know, a couple of weeks ago, you thought, oh, Buffalo week 16, yeah, it'll have some playoff implications. You know, that could be the difference between you having a bye and you going on the road to, say, Houston or Kansas City in the wild card weekend. And so, you know, they have this opportunity. I'd love to see them sort of open up the playbook or at least get back to the things we've talked about, the things they do well, and get themselves in position to finish this regular season strong. But these are uncertain times in Patriots land, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought up the game, because there is a game on Sunday. As much as the 1-12 Bengals are not really fun to talk about, I did want to get your take on the game before we sign off here. What is it that the Bengals do in any way, shape, or form that I'm not going to say they're going to win this game on Sunday, but what do you think they could do that could give the Patriots problems?
Well, I mean, look, if you're Cincinnati, if you're Zach Taylor, I think your ideal game plan is you want to put this ball in Mixon's hands as much as possible.
Yeah, he's been really good.
He's been really good, you know, and he's a tremendous talent at the running back spot. You know, they'll probably try to get the ball to him as a receiver as well out of the backfield. I think they're going to really run stuff through him and then try to get Ross and some of the other receivers sort of involved on play action stuff off of that. You know, some of the crossing routes that we've seen New England struggle with at times defensively. And so, you know, you're going to try to grind this game down a bit. You know, defensively, there isn't much that Cincinnati does that truly scares me. They've got some guys that can get after the passer a bit, but I think, you know, this is an opportunity for the offense to get right. I think this ground game, and part of it, you know, is due to script and the fact that they've lost 12 games, but, you know, they're giving up 4.9 yards per carry on the ground. They're giving up 156.7 yards per game on the ground, which, you know, that's most in the NFL. Again, losing 12 games, you're going to give up yards on the ground when teams try to grind things out at the end. But I think the run game could get going. I hope that Sony Michel gets a lot of these sort of vertical carries like we've been talking about, so the ground game can get right. Look, if they lose this one, you know, forget it, man. Like, we're talking about a completely different situation comes, you know, Sunday night, Monday morning. You know, but if they look bad in this one, if they have like an ugly, like 17-13 kind of win, you know, I don't know how I'm going to be feeling Monday morning looking at Buffalo coming to town in a week, you know. So I want to see improvement from the offense. There's an opportunity in front of them to do that, and I hope they take advantage of it.
Yeah, you know, this is supposed to be, at least in theory, a tune-up game, right? You're going against a 1-12 team that has no business beating you or even competing against you. So this is a game where you can get right in a lot of different ways. I agree that Mixon has been really, really good. he's a guy that he's created a lot out of nothing in a lot of situations. And he's also, when Steph has been there, they like to run that little toss play where they pull the guard in the center and toss it out to Mixon. And they gash the Browns a couple of different times on it. I think they also target him a decent amount, like you said, in the passing game, but also in the vertical passing game. There's a couple of deep shots that they actually flex him out wide and try to get him a matchup on a linebacker or safety, and then ended up throwing it over the top to him, like on a wheel or just a straight go ball or something like that. So he's a threat. The other thing is, quickly about their defense, Bill Belichick has talked about it. Josh McDaniels talked about it this week, too. It is an aggressive scheme. You know, they're going to come one gap. They're going to penetrate. They're going to shoot. They're going to try to get into the backfield. They're going to try to disrupt things. And they have guys like Geno Atkins, obviously, who can do that. So the way this offensive line has been playing, the way that they handled the blitzes last week, I'm very interested to see that if Zach Taylor and this defensive staff turn it up on them again this week, how do they handle it? And it's a great opportunity, like you said, because they're probably going to be able to win this game regardless of how they handle the blitz. But seeing improvement against the blitz and seeing improvement with the way that Josh McDaniels is calling games and using his players and all those types of things, that's what's going to end up being what makes us feel good or bad about this game come, you know, 4:30 on Sunday.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, because let's not forget, now Buffalo defense, you know, they have given Tom Brady, they've given the New England Patriots fits over the past couple of seasons now. And so this is that opportunity, like you said, to iron some things out, to sort of get back on track with what you do offensively before you face a really tough test, you know, in just under 10 days or so, you know, at Saturday at Gillette.
Yeah, short week too. Mark, I really appreciate you doing this. Is there anything you want to plug or tell people where they can find you on Twitter as well?
Well, Evan, always, as always, man, thanks for having me on. Always love it when we get a chance to catch up and talk some football. Best way to find me is on Twitter at Mark Schofield, the Pat's Pulpit podcast feed, the Sco Show over there, right for a bunch of different other places, you know, Inside the Pylon, Pro Football Weekly, Matt Waldman's Rookie Scouting Portfolio, a couple of other SB Nation sites. But the easiest way is on Twitter at Mark Schofield.
Yeah, I told you he's everywhere.
It's like a long list, man.
It's great. No, it's the more Mark Schofield, the better. That's the way I look at it. And as you could tell right off the top of the show, Mark's quarterback analysis especially, but all of his analysis is fantastic. But I don't think, I pick your brain a lot, probably more than most people that I interact with on Twitter, just because of the way that you break down quarterbacks and kind of understand the quarterback position. So I really appreciate you coming on. This is fantastic as always, and we'll have you on again very soon. And on the Patriots All 22 podcast, we'll be back next week, as Mark and I have just talked about a little bit here. That game against Buffalo is a monster. That's going to be potentially for the division in a lot of ways. I think the Patriots can still squeak out the division if they lose on Saturday, just because they're already one win ahead of Buffalo. But if they lose that game on Saturday, it's going to come down to most likely tiebreaker situation for the AFC East. I can't believe I'm saying that. I really can't believe I'm saying that. But here we are. So 3 weeks for the Patriots to get it right. We'll be back next week on the pod to break down this game against Cincinnati and also look ahead to the Buffalo Bills as well. And until next time, signing off from my guest, Mark Schofield. I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening.